You knew the job was dangerous when you took it, Fred.
I have a question. Shh, be respectful of me.
You can act like a man!
He's colossal, stupendous. One might even go so far as to say he's mediocre.
I guess I should salute you as a worthy adversary and all that, but the truth is, I really did hate your guts.
This is the Signal Storm Podcast.
My friends, only stupid people say that all this debt we're accumulating makes no difference. I think Dick Cheney said that debt was meaningless. No, sorry, it is very much consequential, and it will very much hurt us. As you all know, the debt ceiling deal will continue to facilitate more unrepayable debt piled onto future generations. And there's a consequence, there's a price that's going to be paid for all of this. Couple of articles that I was just, from different sources, I just wanted to give you a flavor of what those consequences are. The first one, the Hoover Institution. The U.S. debt, causes and consequences. Well, let me cut through the BS and tell you what the cause is. Irresponsible, feckless, childlike government. Debt held by the public refers to the money the federal government has borrowed from the public that it has yet to pay back. It is often referred to as net debt. An alternative measure of the federal debt is the gross debt. It includes net debt plus money owed to the federal trust fund. That's Social Security, Medicare, hospital insurance trust fund, and other intergovernmental debt. You can read more about the differences, they say, between net and gross debt, and they provide a link. In 2018, the federal government ran a deficit of $779 billion, or about 3.8% of GDP. Debt held by the public totaled $15.7 trillion, 78% of GDP. Going forward, deficits are expected to rise every year. By 2022, federal spending will exceed revenue by over $1 trillion, or about 4.7% of GDP. It only gets worse from here. By 2048, the government's annual shortfall will exceed 9.6% of GDP, according to projections from the Congressional Budget Office. These massive deficits will push the net debt above 150% of GDP over the next 30 years. You can see detailed 30-year projections of the federal debt and a breakdown of future government spending and revenue on with the America Off-Balance Budget Calculator. Now, folks, I chose this article for a specific reason. As you could tell, it was authored before the China virus. The date is May 22nd, 2019. The China virus started making headlines in December of that year. So all of the projected spending that you just heard was thrown off the rails from one China-caused pandemic. I mean, and the debt was already off the charts. $779 billion we were overspending every single year. And had the China virus not cropped its ugly head, courtesy of the China communist government, well, we'd still be on course for $1 trillion in debt because your government doesn't know how to do anything else but spend money it doesn't have. Now, you may be silly enough like Joe Biden and the Republican Party to think, oh, well, there's no more catastrophes, no more crises headed our way. Well, that would be silly. Let me read you another article. This is from 2020. This is October 1st, just before the presidential election. The title of this piece, Five Consequences of U.S. Debt at $50 Trillion. By the way, folks, that's where it's projected to be in the next 10 years. $52 trillion in debt if we stay on this course that Kevin McCarthy just charted for us with Joe Biden. Raising taxes will not solve the problem, writes Forbes. $50 trillion headed our way. It could help reduce the deficit some, but it would be more of a token. That is just the reality. And they put a tax table up here. If we double taxes on the top 25%, double taxes, it would only bring in another $1.3 trillion, assuming people didn't change their behavior. Now, what do they mean by that? Meaning, if you're getting taxed, you know, double in that tax bracket, well, what are you going to do? You're going to stop making so much money. Productivity will crater, and voila, you're looking at a full-blown depression. Parenthetically, a 75% marginal rate plus 4% Medicare for a 79% top rate certainly will change behavior. That's what they mean. That's what your marginal tax rate would be, 75%, right? For the top 25% of folks. A less shocking 20% to 25% increase would only bring in about $3 billion to $400 billion and would have to raise rates on incomes above $83,000. That's not exactly the rich. They already think they pay their fair share. If we raise taxes next year in the teeth of a recession, it will only make the recession worse. If we raise taxes, but they don't actually take effect until 2023 and then get phased in, that would probably avoid creating a double dip recession. Debt is future income brought forward. There is a point at which debt becomes a drag on the U.S. economic growth, and we've likely reached it. What they're trying to say is, folks, is that we have so much debt, it keeps us from achieving full productivity in this country. And it's only going to get worse because we have feckless, irresponsible politicians who refuse to live within their means. We discuss the debt ceiling, what it is and what it really isn't, and the problems we are facing in this country. Trish Regan comes your way next on the Salcedo Storm podcast.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Are you sick of all these Medicare commercials? Well, what if you're under 65 and need quality, affordable health coverage? American Medical Plan specializes in under 65 health insurance plans that have zero copays at the doctor and no deductible on all outpatient services, including surgeries. You pick your doctors and hospitals. There are private plans, enroll anytime, and they are 30 to 60% less than Obamacare. If you're paying too much for your own health insurance, call American Medical Plans. They will customize a plan managed and chosen by you, not the government.
A liberty-loving American takes on Washington, Hollywood, and the whole media establishment. He's Chris Salcedo. Join his fight. Tune in to the Chris Salcedo Show every weekday afternoon on Newsmax.
The establishment media is out of touch with the real things real Texans care about. Real news for real Texans. That's what Texas Scorecard does every day. Learn more and subscribe for free. TexasScorecard.com/Chris.
All right, folks, let's get to it. Have a conversation with Trish Regan. She is, of course, the proprietor of TrishIntel.com and host of the Trish Regan Show. Welcome back, lady.
Hey, it's good to talk to you, Chris.
Great talk with you. Now, look, I know you know the difference, but I think that a lot of folks in the press, even in the financial press, conflate debt ceiling and default, because just because you hit the debt ceiling doesn't necessarily mean you default, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, look, I mean, there's a series of stages, right? And maybe the first answer is you can't pay some of your government employees because you can't borrow more money, therefore you can't pay the employees. They always threaten the Social Security thing. It's certainly possible. Maybe you would choose to not be able to pay some of the Social Security payments. And then as you get down the road, then you would say, okay, well, how do we prioritize our bondholders? And so there might be some bondholders that might be temporarily left in the lurch. I do believe that eventually they'll come back and get paid. But, you know, Chris, it's kind of shameful that we're even in this position. I mean, the reason we're in this is because you get a bunch of people there in Washington that don't know how to negotiate, namely Joe Biden. Don't forget, he started this entire process by digging in his heels and saying, hey, you know what? I want a clean debt ceiling only, which meant he did not want to cut one penny from any of the discretionary items. He wasn't willing to even entertain any discussions surrounding, let's get this budget somewhat more organized and less bloated. He wasn't willing to do that. And so I think that starting from there made it very clear. Say you're going to sell your house, right?
Yeah.
And someone comes along and says, hey, you know, I'll offer you, and see, they offer you 3% less, and you're like, nope, nope, I am only selling it for this. It was that kind of attitude, an unwillingness to even engage. And I've seen it, by the way, in the housing market myself, when I've made a bid for something that was pretty close to offer, and the seller goes, nope, I don't want to entertain any negotiations, only for them to 6 months down the road sell it for a fraction, maybe, of what I had originally offered.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this is what you call poor negotiating style. And because he has had an entire career in politics as opposed to business, where you got to get things done, this is what we're left with.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what? He also fails to recognize the role of the House of Representatives. According to our Constitution, all spending originates there. So they have a say in this. And for Joe Biden and for Chuck Toomer to say, oh, well, you know what, the House is immaterial, doesn't matter because Republicans run it, that's just not the way it works according to the Constitution. So not only is Joe Biden a failed negotiator because he's never signed the front of a paycheck, he's also a failed American because he doesn't understand the Constitution. Let me ask you about, get your reaction to Congresswoman Jayapal and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They are warning Joe Biden, if he accepts, and this, we're not even talking about cuts, we're just talking about reducing the rate of increase of spending of the government. There is no cut that's on the table right now from congressional Republicans. I wish there were, but there aren't. So listen to these two, and I want to get your reaction. This is Jayapal and AOC.
I think there would be a huge backlash from our entire House Democratic, you know, caucus, certainly the progressives, but also in the streets. You know, I mean, I think that this is, it's important that we don't take steps back from the very strong agenda that the president himself shepherded and led over the last 2 years.
But if the president agrees to spending caps, or if he agrees to work requirements on certain social safety programs,
it's going to be a problem. We do not legislate through the debt ceiling for this very reason.
So basically, there you heard Jayapal saying, yeah, it's going to be a problem. If you cut government spending, it's going to be a problem, quote, in the streets. That's a threat.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's disgusting, frankly. I mean, the threats of violence, the threats, we've been through it already. I don't know if you saw the news today. Black Lives Matter is on the verge of bankruptcy, yet still paying some of the family members millions of dollars. Listen, I don't appreciate that. I don't like that. I don't think anybody does. The reality is this. You think about it as a family, right? Chris, you know, if you make more money this year than you did last year, does that mean that you should spend more money?
Nope.
Because you got to keep up with your overall GDP of your family? Absolutely not.
Nope.
It means you should save more money, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you're fortunate enough to grow your paycheck, the idea is you put that money in the bank, you pay off your debt, you know, invest somehow in the future. You do not say, okay, well, we're gonna expand, you know, our movie allowance for our 17-year-old kid. Like, that's not what you do as a family if you're thinking prudently, articulately about your future. And yet these not so articulate, not so thoughtful, not economically astute individuals there in Washington, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, are out there saying, well, okay, well, if we make more money, we've got to spend more money. And this is something that actually it has just been embedded in Democrat thought. I don't know if I told you this story or if your viewers have heard this before. I remember years ago when I was at Bloomberg Television, Barack Obama was running for president again. I was leading, actually, all the political coverage. And I was in a discussion, maybe at one of the DNC events, with none other than Jean Sperling, who was head of the Economic Council for President Obama at
yep.
the time.
Yep.
And he was livid because I said, but I don't understand. Here's the deal. Why do you need to spend more? And he's going on and on. Well, it needs to keep up with GDP. If we're growing the economy, then obviously, effectively calling me stupid, hey, stupid, you got to spend more money. And I'm like, no. You're growing more money. Like, and again, I use the family example. If you are fortunate enough to be able to grow your household income, don't you want to pay off the debt?
Exactly.
Instead of like running it up to 31.4 trillion where we are now. But they don't anywhere. Actually, it's very interesting. It went all the way up to the food chain, all through management, all the way to Mike Bloomberg. And I had to sit there and argue with all my managers and say, listen to me. This is wrong, what he's saying. And they're like, but it's right, right? And I'm like, okay, we have a real difference in philosophy here.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. But,
Reagan.
You know, and this is what they believe, okay? So this is what Joe Biden and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez believes. And that is not good for our country.
I know.
Look at what it's done to our fundamentals.
I know. Reagan said that you are silly. You are vacuous to believe that the federal government is not constrained by the same economic laws that you as families are constrained by. You are insane. You can live beyond your means, but only for a short period of time. Sooner or later, you got to pay the piper. And that's what Reagan said. Now, let me ask you about some of the numbers here, because you mentioned that, and you and I agree, that just because you hit the debt ceiling doesn't mean you have to default. Already in 2023, the federal government has taken in $2.6 trillion. Now, I would rationalize that you could pay your obligations. You may not be able to have, you know, the Corvette and all of your massive non-constitutional government spending the Democrats and the Republicans have agreed to, but you could handle your obligations with $2.6 trillion. Now, there's a caveat to that. We are fast approaching, because of rising interest rates and because of the ballooning principal on the debt, we're fast approaching $1 trillion in interest payments alone on the debt. $1 trillion with a T. So Americans are paying record amounts, between $4.5 to $5 trillion in taxes every single year, yet the Congress overspends. Doesn't that have to stop?
Yes, it has to stop. I mean, where is the Tea Party, right, when we need them? I think people need to care about this stuff, because if they don't care enough, well, you're going to wake up one day and somebody else is going to be the world's reserve currency. And now some people may say, well, who cares? Who needs it? Well, trust me, we do need it.
We
are basically a banana republic in so many ways. Don't even get me started. And the difference between us and those banana republics is that we are the world's reserve currency. So ultimately, everybody still wants to be invested in the U.S. And that gives us a ton of cover. We need to preserve that. We need to keep that. And, you know, Chris, we need to respect that. Okay, I'm sorry, but we have to have some respect
Indeed.
For our history and for our AAA credit rating and a desire to preserve that. Otherwise, we're going to lose a lot of privileges that we probably take for granted. Clearly, these people in Washington that think that they can flirt with this disaster take it for granted. As far as the default, no, you're absolutely right. Like, that doesn't need to be the first stop. But you see, they do this because they want to scare people. Think about fear.
Fear mongering.
And Neil Gorsuch said it so well in his statement this week about how fear just consumed people. And all of a sudden, because of fear, people were willing to listen to one person and one person only, which you know was Anthony Fauci. And instead of having an economist at the table, a mental health expert at the table, mm-hmm. an educational expert at the table, all people did was listen to Fauci. And he became a dictatorship unto himself. And it was all through fear. So they know this works. So if Janet Yellen goes out on CNBC often enough and says, oh, gosh, you know, like, we're going to default tomorrow if we don't fix this, it creates a tremendous amount of fear. And what I would just say is, hey, listen, buddy, Joe Biden, you want to go down in history as the first president of the United States to default on our debt? You go for it. You go for it. There's no way they're going to let that happen. You understand that, right?
I hope
so. Calm everybody down.
I don't know.
Much like I tried to do during March 2020.
I know.
Listen, they may do stupid stuff, but it's not going to be as bad as you think.
Well, you look at Joe Biden, and when you say, well, they're not going to do stupid things, I don't have high confidence.
Oh,
let me put that.
He will go down as having destroyed the country. Even more than he's already known for that. If he defaults on debt, it's over. It's over, Chris.
I know.
So
I know.
He's threatening this stuff because he doesn't understand it. The guy really doesn't know 1 + 1 = 2, and he can't do any math. And I really do not think he is a bright man at all.
Well, no, that's not a mechanism of. I just want to point this out. You're not being ageist. Joe Biden has always been the village idiot. He's always been an idiot, and that's. That's why I resent the Democrats so much for imposing this man, inflicting this man upon the country. Last thing, Trish, I wanted to get you to, by the way, Trish Regan is our guest, trishintel.com, host of the Trish Regan Show. look, I want you to put your media hat on, and I'm gonna, I don't want you to comment on the stories necessarily, but I want you to give the folks, because you've been around media a long time, Bloomberg, Fox, and Fox Business. I just want you to give me your analysis, because there have been a series of what many are classifying. You've seen Eric Bolling. You've seen Megyn Kelly. You've seen Dan Bongino. They're out there talking mostly on Newsmax about what Fox has been up to. And the latest story to come out of Fox, and this was coming out of the Daily Signal, is that Fox is pushing the trans idiocy, the non-scientific trans idiocy, that if you're at Fox and you're a man who identifies as a woman, you get to use the ladies' bathroom. And many people are shocked to find that this is policy inside of Fox News. And they also dedicate resources to folks who are either male that want to be female or female that want to be male and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
that
insane.
Yeah, that with
so, look,
Tucker
I
and that
Fox
with
is,
Bongino and all of this stuff. How do you see the machinations around the media landscape and the shifting alliances and the shifting audiences?
I think that Fox has kind of seen its last hurrah. I'm not kidding on that. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this and looking at it and looking at the numbers. Ratings have just been decimated down to, 1.3 million that they're getting after having been at 3.2 million with Tucker Carlson. They were upwards of 4 with Bill O'Reilly. I think that at this point, the Fox viewer feels way too burned. I mean, when you think of the people that were unceremoniously shown the door, whether it was Tucker, whether it was me, whether it was Dan Bongino, I don't know the case with Megyn Kelly. But what I would say is that the audience feels like, wait a second. You know, they used to feel like a family. They really trusted all of the anchors that were on there. And I think that the anchors, frankly, trusted the organization to have their back. And we all soon found out that was not indeed the case at all. A lot of it has to do with management. I think that management is having a really hard time sort of corralling everybody. If they were able to kind of keep everybody sort of on a steady path, they wouldn't have been dealing with the Dominion lawsuit to the tune of $800 million. So as an investor, I'd be very concerned about this company for sure right now. I think the medium is dying out. I think there's tremendous competition, certainly from Newsmax, and you may see OAN and you may see some others start to emerge, again, chipping away at their audience that they once had a monopoly on. Those monopolies, as we have seen with Budweiser, right, with Bud Light and Anheuser-Busch, mm-hmm. they can disappear overnight.
Yep.
And so without a strong leader at the helm to kind of see them through this and help really keep the viewer while simultaneously leading viewers, right? Like, you know, they got into a situation where I think that they were so desperate to appease the viewers. We've seen that there's text messages where anchors thought one thing and then did another. That comes down to lousy leadership. Where was Suzanne Scott helping to steady the boat? And if she can't do it, and I have my real doubts just given what we've seen over the last couple of years, then what are the Murdochs going to do? Who do they put in that place? I don't think it's Lachlan. So I do believe, you know, if I were investing, I'm not invested in Fox, but if I were investing in the company, I'd take a real pause here and say until they can figure out how to manage the joint, there are too many headwinds against it. Poor management combined with a very weak talent bench, combined with the industry fundamentals really changing and turning against them. And people are seeking out other sources of news. Dan yep. Bongino is a great example. Tucker Carlson is going to go do a show on Tucker. We've been exploding on YouTube, my YouTube channel.
I know.
It's crazy, Chris. We've grown like 25,000 subs in the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Our presence on Rumble is also going crazy.
Right.
The Chris Salcedo radio show just on Rumble. We're not even doing television on Rumble. And people are hungry. And I think you put it best. People have trusted brands, and those brands are entrusted with putting their audiences first. And I think from Bud Light to Miller Lite to Fox, they betrayed that trust much. And you know, I'm sorry, I just see a lot of parallels to politics, because you put Paul Ryan on that board, you know, a guy who did so much damage to the Republican brand, and you put him on a Fox board, and he does the same thing to the Fox brand.
It's appeasement.
Brand. Yep.
But you see what's going on? They're all trying to appease, and this is a bigger conversation
yes.
you and I should maybe share for a podcast, but it's the ESG stuff. environmental social governance and the CEI.
A podcast? Was that an invite? Or are you inviting me to your?
Yeah, I'd love to have you
to your podcast.
I am
honored.
Right, that's what's going on, and it's ruining American capitalism. It is ruining everyone's retirement, and it's ruining these companies.
Folks, did you notice what I just did? I just invited myself onto Trish Regan's podcast. By the way, wildly popular podcast. Trish Regan, everybody, one of America's most trusted voices in economics, and she knows her way around the business world and the media world. Editor-in-chief, TrishIntel.com, and the host of the Trish Regan Show. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Okay, we'll do the podcast, promise.
All right, see you later. I am so shameless sometimes, I know. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of the Salcedo Storm podcast. Do me a favor and visit a couple of websites. First off, visit TexasScorecard.com, TexasScorecard.com. That's where you find enterprising journalism. That's where you will see individuals who actually care about the issues that impact us, whether it be the schools, the economy, whether it be the borders. That's where the great reporting is happening. Also, check out ChrisSalcedo.com. That's where you find me, the Chris Salcedo Shows, on AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas, simulcast with TNT Radio worldwide. Also, check out the Chris Salcedo Show on Newsmax TV, 4 o'clock Eastern until 5, Monday through Friday. Until we visit again, my friends, remember this. A society's worth is not measured by how much power is stolen by an out-of-control government, whether it be in the federal or state level. Its worth is measured by how much power is reserved for you and me, we, the people. Stay safe out there, my friends.